from Lake Itasca to Lake Pepin and the rest of the land of sky blue waters. We are Minnesota Score Radio, your sports ticket. Wally and Eric back for yet another week as we slice and dice the always busy, always topical, always cluttered Twin Cities sports scene. Although by Twin City standards, this week a little slow now that the Wild are done and the Twins have been gone. They come back home this weekend, open up a homestand on Friday against Tampa Bay. But professionally speaking, it's been a little slow.
Yeah, it has. And the Wild, as you say, done. The Wolves waiting to see where they're going to...
They've been cooked for a while.
Yeah, well, they've been cooked for a while. But now all the excitement is around whether they're going to get enough ping pong balls to get themselves a top three draft pick. Vikings... mini camp, OTAs, all that good stuff. But the only ones in action, as you mentioned, are your Minnesota Twins. Home this weekend to Tampa. Off the road trip that took them to Cleveland and Detroit. You know, playing much better baseball, obviously. And being led by, of all people, of course, the guy that some critics were complaining, why are we spending $10 million on a 40-year-old outfielder? Torii Hunter. Having a pretty good start to the season. Now, he did start off, actually, he started off kind of slow, but he's been on a tear lately and hit another home run on Wednesday. I think he has six now, yeah. Coming into the weekend anyway, he had six. And so he's been everything that they could have possibly asked for.
And more, yeah. I would say. The critics are clueless. I mean, you know, even if you were going to get a Torii who's only going to give you a 250 to 270 batting average with 15 home runs and 70 to 80 runs batted in, that's still productivity that the Twins will take. And I heard so much about this, you know, the sabermetrics and all that stuff about him not being the right fielder that they need, that he's lost a step and all this. You know, I don't like that stuff. I think it's paralysis by analysis. He knows the game. He knows the angles. And what he doesn't have now in foot speed, he makes up for in baseball IQ, because he's a very smart player, and that's developed over the years. And you know, you and I have harped on it for years, but we've been right. He's a leader in the room. There's just no question about it. And the other guys feed off of his energy. I mean, now they're dancing after victories in the clubhouse, and there's smoke and there's disco music, and I mean he creates an atmosphere of fun. Yet, if it gets out of hand and you're not taking your business seriously, he'll give you a kick in the backside to say, hey, we're still out here to win games. But he's a great guy to have, especially for a rookie manager like Paul Molitor. And that's probably why Molitor lobbied to get him in the offseason, because I remember Torii telling me once, Paul Molitor helped him a lot when he was younger and he was raw. This kid out of Pine Bluff, Arkansas. Yeah, he had ability, but he didn't know the game. And Molly sat him down many times and said, this is what you do. Study pitchers, you know, work on base running angles, etc. And they're a good fit.
No disrespect to Gardy, but I'm going to tell you something that I experienced, watched, saw last week that I never saw with Gardy. I was talking to Torii in the clubhouse after a game when they were in that last homestand a week or so ago. And we were chatting for about 5-10 minutes. And towards the end of our conversation, Paul Molitor walks into the locker room and just nonchalantly walks up. And Torii says, hey, give me a minute. I got to talk to Molitor. And they stood and talked. And I backed away and kind of semi-listened. But, you know, he was asking him. He was just having a discussion with him about how he feels. And can he go again the next day? And, you know, just various things within the context of what was going on with the club at the time. And I never really saw that from Gardy. I think, you know, Gardy kind of separated himself, and that's different styles, different managers. But I kind of like that. I like the fact that Molitor walks into the clubhouse and talks to his players and, you know, kind of gets some insight so he knows what's going on in there. I just was impressed by that. And Molitor wasn't, and you know, Paul Molitor is the freaking manager of this team. He's a Hall of Famer. He could have just bumped me out of there, but he politely, asked to be excused so that he could talk to Torii. I just liked the entire scene of what I saw there. It seemed normal. You know, it didn't seem like there's a hierarchy and a lowerarchy in that clubhouse. It seemed like everybody's kind of on the same level. Molitor's in there to find out what's going on.
Yeah, and I think Paul Molitor has a very cerebral approach to the game of baseball. And I think early on when they were down in Florida and spring training started, he laid down some simple rules. among them, hey, we're going to shut the phones off, you know, a half hour before game time. They're going to disappear, things like that. I want your focus. We saw what he did to Aaron Hicks when he had a base running gaff, didn't know how many outs there were in Florida. And, you know, he made a point to single him out and say, we can't tolerate that here. And eventually Hicks got sent down to start the year. Now he's back up. But my point is, I think he's keeping it simple. You know, just a few basic, hard and simple rules. You hustle, you play smart, you don't do something stupid, and then the rest takes care of itself. He will let these guys have fun. I don't think he wants to be, you know, Billy Martin or Earl Weaver and in guys' grill all the time and in their face and, you know, giving them a kick constantly. I think he will go up and try to have a nice civil conversation with a player. And then if that doesn't work, maybe he'll have to raise the voice a bit. But, you know, it's early on in Paul Molitor's, you know, managerial tenure, but I'd have to say I like what I see so far out of him. And a guy like Torrey Hunter is a bridge. He's a bridge in that locker room to a guy like Aaron Hicks or Jordan Schaefer. We're going to hear from him later on in the broadcast. I mean, the one thing about Torrey, and you know this, Wally, he's universally respected by his peers, not just his teammates, but his opponents. I remember when he hit the, what was it, his 300th career home run at Target Field a couple of years ago. It was his first season in Detroit. And you and I and a few others went down to interview him and congratulate him. But as we waited for him to get ready to talk, up comes Justin Verlander with, I'm going to assume, some very expensive champagne.
Oh, yeah.
And he hands him a bottle of champagne. Keep in mind, Torrey'd only been there, you know, a month and a half in the regular season. And he already, you could tell, the guys really respected him. Jim Leland came up, gave him a big hug. And you know how crusty Leland is. He's a
Cabrera.
Yeah. I mean, and I just sat back and I took, you know, I sponged it up. I said, this is the power of Torrey Hunter. He can win over a room quickly.
And he did. And he's done it again here in Minnesota, much like he did for the 10 or 11 years
and
he was there originally.
And he did it with the L.A. Angels. I bet if you brought Mike Trout on this show, maybe Rocky can line up Mike Trout. That'd be a good catch, literally, right? A Trout. But I bet if you asked Mike Trout what Torrey Hunter did for him, he'd probably rave about him. I look, we have pounded the Torrey drum for years. I'm sure some of our listeners get tired of hearing it, but we're not his PR guys. We're just speaking the truth here. We know what we've seen over the years, and it was a huge loss when they let him go, and he eventually signed with the LA Angels. They had another chance to get him back, but he went to Detroit. Finally, they get it right, and there's still some gas left in the tank. That's huge. I think the other thing that early on appears to be a positive, and you said you didn't want to bang on Gardy, and I respect that, and I'm not banging on Rick Anderson. I respect Rick Anderson, but it was time for a change, time for some different voices. I think this Neil Allen has a different approach, and I like Eddie Guardado as your bullpen coach. Eddie Guardado is a little bit like Torrey. He'll keep it loose, he'll have fun, but if Eddie Guardado has to raise his voice, he will, and he's a guy people respect.
Well, and they should. And he had a long career, and he did well for the Twins as their closer for a number of years in the mid-2000s. And he's a likable guy, too. And I think that, you know, that's part of it. You got to be together for 5, 6, 7 months, whatever it is, you know, from the start of the regular season, or actually from the start of, you know, spring training all the way to October. You better like each other at least some. Unless you're the New York Yankees of the 70s, where you know,
Bronx is burning.
Yeah, and unless you're that good talent-wise and that superior to everybody else, you better like each other, because it's a long season to not like each other and spend all that time together.
Yeah, and, you know, you're going to have some guys you get along with better than others. That's just a natural
thing.
Human
nature.
Right, in a clubhouse with 25 players and coaches and a manager. But, yes, I mean, you have to, at least when you are together in the room on the field, you respect what the other guy's trying to do, what you're trying to do, and buy into the team concept. It sounds corny, but that's really what it comes down to. You have to buy into the team concept. And I think that, you know, so far Paul Molitor has been able to convey that. I mean, it's very early. They don't vote for manager of the year in mid-May. But if they did, Paul Molitor would get some votes. I can assure you that.
He definitely would. All right. You mentioned Jordan Schaefer is going to join us here in a little bit. His playing time is going to be affected if Aaron Hicks stays up this time around. Now, Aaron Hicks was tearing it up at AAA in Rochester. I think he was hitting about .380. He got off to a great start in Rochester. Is this Aaron Hicks' only chance this year? Is he going to have to wait till September if he implodes here over the next week or two?
Well,
I don't think they're going to totally give up on him regardless. That's not my question. My question is, will he get another chance this year if this doesn't work out?
Right. Is it a three strikes and you're out scenario? Well, you know, I know in the first couple of games against Detroit, he showed some positive signs, did some things well. He was ripping it up down at Rochester. It was a no-brainer that they brought him up. And I'm glad the Twins haven't given up on this guy because he does have ability. We know that.
Yep.
Hey, he's a switch hitter, and he can cover a lot of ground in the outfield, and he's still young. And again, to circle back to Torrey, I think his presence should be able to help Hicks. I mean, if Hicks doesn't have a better outlook and approach to the game now, I don't think he ever will.
No.
But you know, you get humbled when you're sent down to the minor leagues more than once because you don't want to be at AAA. There's such a gulf, such a gap between AAA and MLB. That's why they call it the show. The per diem at the major league level is about $100 a day. You know, the minimum salary is, what, $500,000, something like that? I mean, it's ridiculous. You're in five-star hotels. You're on charter jets. You're traveling in luxury. AAA is different. AAA, you're sitting there in economy with your legs, you're hitting your chin. So you don't want to go back, and I hope that's his motivation.
Yeah, well, we shall see. He's getting another chance now. So far, so good early on in his return to a Twins uniform. Let's hope that he's able to stay. And if he does, you know, maybe it'll give Paul Mahler and Terry Ryan a reason to have to scratch their head and decide what they want to do. Maybe they'll have a nice problem with too many guys out there.
Look, this can have a happy ending for everybody involved. I you know, based on everything I've heard, with Aaron Hicks, it's just about your approach. This is your job. You have to take it seriously. You have to be into the game. You know, in football, they always say down and distance. You know, be aware of the situation. In baseball, you gotta know how many outs there are, how many strikes. You have to go up, have a plan with your at-bats, know the pitcher. Little things, studying. And if Aaron Hicks gets that part of it, I think he's going to be fine. And that'll give the Twins even more depth because eventually Byron Buxton comes up.
Yeah. Well, and all he has to do is watch what number 48 does. And if Hicks can kind of just mirror what Torrey Hunter is doing, he'll be just fine.
And remember when Aaron Hicks came up as a rookie and we talked to him, who did he say that he idolized? Torrey Hunter.
Torrey Hunter.
His first game was against Justin Verlander and the Tigers on a cold day at Target Field, and Torrey was playing for Detroit then. So, look, he's right there next to you, and he will give you all the tips you want.
Soak it up. All right. Rocky has just texted the guest list here. We're going to do some more. We're going to hear some more fishing a little bit later on with Al Moss. But you have, as you mentioned already.
Yeah, Rocky's lined up Jordan Schaefer, one of the Twins outfielders, that crowded center field spot. So we'll hear what Jordan Schaefer has to say as we continue on Minnesota Score Radio, your Torrey ticket.
The Twin Cities home for Minnesota Score Radio is Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Now back to Wally and Eric.
All right, talking baseball with the twin center fielder Jordan Schaefer. And when you guys started 1-6, the media, the fan base, they were down on you. But what kept you guys going? What kept you believing that it was so early?
I mean, it's a long season. You start off the first road trip, we go 1-5, and we come back and lose the home opener here, and there's 162 games. It's, your season isn't defined in first week. Mm-hmm. So it's in here, we all knew that, hey, like, listen, everything's going to be okay. We just need to go out there and we need to improve on some things because obviously that first week we just didn't play well. Tigers played really well the first series. We didn't. We knew things would turn around. We just needed to grind out and really, get to work.
And things don't turn around overnight. As you said, it's a long grind, 162 games, spring training. If you're lucky, the postseason. Do you just try to go out and win series and say, let's just take it real slowly?
Yeah, I mean, really the biggest thing is to go out and try to win series. If you win series, you're gonna be in contention at the end of the year. So that's really our main goal, is, hey, let's go out and win every series. It's obviously, that's not always going to happen. Obviously, you're going to hit a streak, and as well, we've been playing lately, we're going to hit a streak again where we're not playing well. It's just really how fast you can get out of that. Same thing as a hitter, there's going to be ups and downs throughout the year, and it's how fast you can get out of those times you're not feeling well and not have those slumps be prolonged.
Taking care of business at home is huge. If you're going to be in the playoff chase, you better win the majority of your home games. It seems like you guys have now established a home field edge.
Yeah, I mean, it's the fans are great out there. Obviously, it's a comforting thing to come to your own home ballpark and play. And like you said, if you can have that edge at home and then, I mean, just try to play 500 baseball on the road, you're going to be there at the end of the year.
How do you feel in center field? You and Shane Robinson have split the duties. We know that Byron Buxton's down on the farm, the young phenom. But break down Jordan Schaefer's game. How do you feel right now?
I feel good. The first week I felt good. Second week I kind of hit a skid there where I wasn't feeling real good, just trying to battle some stuff and just trying to stay within myself. And then, I mean, I feel good. Obviously, there's always going to be young guys coming up. I mean, that doesn't really affect me much. I'm trying to do my job here, and whether it's here or wherever it is, I'm just trying to help my team win the best I can.
Are you aware of Buxton? Certainly, he's the minor league phenom. I'm sure you know of him, and you've played with him in spring training, etc. But or do you just go out and say, you know what, I'm Jordan Schaefer, I'm going to do what I do?
I mean, obviously, he's a great kid. I got to know him a little bit in spring training. Seems like a very humble kid. Very talented kid. But at the same time, my job here is to go out and help this team win. And if that time comes where they want him here and I go somewhere else, or if that's what the case is, then so be it. But right now my job is here and to help this team win.
The Minnesota Twins have a tremendous pedigree in center field. I mean, you look at Kirby Puckett, Torrey Hunter, Denard Span, Ben Revere. Now you're out there, and it's a cavernous ballpark here at Target Field. Explain defensively how you approach things at Target Field.
It's a spacious park for sure. Really the thing is do your homework on scouting reports so you can get that edge, and then in center you can see whether the ball's in or out so you can get a better jump on the ball. So a lot of it just has to do with doing your homework early and then making sure you pay attention during the game of what count it is, what pitch is being thrown, how the hitter's reacting. So it's just, like I said, if you do those things and you get good jumps on the ball, you'll be all right.
Is it fun to have that guy standing next to you in right field, Torrey Hunter? I mean, all those gold gloves, and of course, he set the bar pretty high when he played in center field.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's an awesome teammate, an awesome player, an awesome human being. I can't say enough about the guy. He's been a real joy for me to be around. He's been huge for this clubhouse, just kind of relaxing everything, but at the same time, going out there and making sure that we compete and we grind and we don't give things away, and obviously at the end of the day, it's all about winning.
Tell the fans in Twins territory about Jordan Schaefer. You're from Florida, grew up in Orlando, Southern guy, now you're in the North.
Yeah, I was born in Chicago, but I grew up most of the time in Florida, and I'm really enjoying my time here, and I like the city a lot. The people have been awesome, so I'm excited to be here.
Okay. Thanks, Jordan.
Thanks.
From the land of sky blue waters, you're listening to Minnesota Score Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
And we are back. Minnesota Score Radio, your Twins ticket. Again, the Twins and the Rays, three-game weekend series over at Trendy Target Field. And how about Tampa Bay? No Joe Maddon. A lot of injuries. Starting pitchers have gone down, but they're still above 500. That is a resilient baseball team, isn't it?
It is, and they're in a division that is just kind of hard to figure. The Yankees have gotten off to a decent start. You always looked at the East for how long, and you knew that you're going to get probably the wild card team. This is pre-two wild cards. You knew you're going to get the wild card team out of there, and whoever was going to win the division that year. And it's been kind of a crapshoot, but yeah, Tampa somehow manages in that crummy ballpark they have. And like you said, without Maddon, it's just amazing.
Yeah, you can talk about having a gem of a ballpark, and the Twins certainly have one, as do most MLB teams now. And you can talk about a payroll where your owner's got deep pockets and they'll spend whatever they need to spend. But year in, year out, the Rays and the A's always seem to be in the mix. And they have the two worst ballparks, Oakland and Tampa Bay.
Yeah, that's
so it still comes down to scouting, development, managing, your approach, your philosophy as an organization. And you know, you give the Rays credit. they're hanging around in what I've always called the payroll division, the AL East, where you've got to battle the pocketbooks of the Yankees and the Red Sox, and the Orioles will spend some money, and Toronto will.
Yeah, Toronto's.
They'll spend the loony.
Yeah, you are correct. All right, staying on the baseball topic, couple of things. One, the Big Ten tournament is at Target Field next week, or this coming weekend, or whatever, I guess, however you want to frame it. Boy, the Gophers have just struggled mightily this year. This has not been a very good season for John Anderson. I'd have to look it up, but this might be one of their worst years ever. And of course, they're in a conference that includes Maryland, one of the top teams in the nation. You know, when you added Maryland and Rutgers, you added, particularly in the case of Maryland, you added a baseball program that has some significant history, and you know they're very good this year. And of course, you know, you already had some decent teams in the conference as it was. So tough row to hoe for John Anderson, but there is still some very good college baseball in Minnesota at the D2 level, and that of course is St. Cloud State hosting the Central Regional NCAAs this weekend. It got off to a rainy start on Thursday. The whole thing was washed out, so they basically had to double down on all the Friday and Saturday games. But what a season for Coach Dolan and St. Cloud State this year.
Yeah, remarkable. I know they entered the tournament at 51-3.
How do you, and I asked one of the sports information department, I said, how do you play 54 games in such a short period of time? That's amazing.
Well, you know, St. Cloud State, like the Gophers and pretty much any baseball program in the upper Midwest, you have to jam a lot of games into a short period of time. And now that your favorite venue, the Metrodome, is nothing but dust and the glass house is going up, these programs, which used to play in the Metrodome and benefit from it, by the way, because they could get games in. They could bring teams to the Twin Cities. Now they're scrambling all over the country to get games in, and they usually got to go south or they got to go west because, as you know, tough to play baseball in this part of the world, even with what we've had, a pretty good spring, but you've still had your days where it's been cold or rainy.
And I wonder, and you bring up a great point, I wonder, and if you ask John Anderson this, he might give you a more clear answer. He's not going to make excuses, but I wonder if not having the Dome the last couple of years is starting to take its toll on the program, because, you know, they were so good for so long, able to play all those early games, guaranteed games all along. Like you said, invite teams in. That was the Gophers' home field, was the Metrodome for years. But they've had to travel like crazy to get in the number of games that they need to get in for the last couple of seasons, and next season too. They're not out of the woods yet, because that glass house of yours built in downtown Minneapolis isn't going to be done until, you know, basically opening kickoff for the 2016
season. Now, is that glass going to be baseball proof? If somebody hits a laser beam off the glass, it's not going to shatter, is it?
I don't know. It's not bird proof. We know
well,
that.
If the baseball goes through the glass, then the birds could fly into the glass house.
There,
right?
We go. You have birds flying around in there.
It'd be a birdhouse.
Oh, Lord.
It's going up quick.
Yeah, it is. Boy, I drive by that thing, and it's like, holy Toledo, that thing is just a monstrosity down there.
It's a skyscraper stadium. I mean, the footprint isn't that big. There's nothing around it but roads, but it's just going straight in the sky. No tailgating or anything, but it's
a lot of upward mobility.
Yeah.
Back to the Gopher yes. thing, though. Do you think that that's a valid point? I really believe it's got to be taking a toll.
I agree. I think it was an advantage for the Gophers. I mean, you look at the DQ Classic. When was that? Usually late February, early March?
Yep.
You'd see teams like UCLA here.
Yeah.
Well, you know, or Texas A&M or, you know, Florida State. And I'm like, wow, there's no way, obviously, they'd ever come up to play here without a facility that would allow it. So, yes, I think it was a huge advantage. It was one of those good news, bad news scenarios as a guy who used to do Gopher baseball play-by-play. You know, I enjoy doing the games. I respect that, you know, that program a ton. John Anderson's done a wonderful job. He's the winningest coach in Big Ten baseball history. But you'd go into the games, and there'd be 500 to 1,000 people there in this cavernous Metrodome. And it didn't have a good vibe, but you were able to play games, and you were able to play quality opponents. So I think it definitely helped the Gophers and teams like St. Cloud State. I remember one year there was a blizzard somewhere down in Kansas, and schools in Kansas were calling the Dome, and can we come up and just get games in? And they're playing at like 1 a.m.
Oh, yeah, they'll play any time of the day.
Exactly. And, you know, but St. Cloud State, what they've done, you know, number one in the nation, Pat Dolan, who's the cousin of, you know, the Treloar family. We know them well. Kudos to him. He's got to be your D2 coach of the year.
Yeah, at 51-3 coming into the weekend. Now, if St. Cloud State emerges this weekend, they would go to the D2 World Series, which is in Cary, North Carolina. I believe that starts next weekend. So high hopes and well wishes for St. Cloud State. It's been an unbelievable year. 51-3 and ranked number one in the nation in several polls.
Yeah, and anytime you're number one and you play baseball in Minnesota or the upper Midwest, it's a huge achievement because there really is, to me, it's very difficult in this part of the country to be successful at baseball against these Sun Belt teams, which have just a major advantage. They get outside more, and it's just more conducive to playing games. But they've figured out a way to get it done, and we'll see if they're able to get down to North Carolina.
That'd be good. It'd be good for the program. It'd be good for Minnesota to have a team down there. Okay, you mentioned the glass house towering over downtown Minneapolis. Where are the discussions now with regard to this new soccer stadium that they want to build? You know, we heard a lot a couple of weeks ago, and the state legislature basically put their foot down, the Senate did anyway, voting overwhelmingly, saying, nope, you're not going to get any tax breaks on this thing. Is this going to happen? What's going on with that?
Yeah, that's a good question. Is that a deal breaker? Because you've got the McGuire, Polad, Taylor group saying, we'll build the stadium. We just want some incentives. You know, infrastructure, tax-related stuff, things like that. They want to get it done. They want to have this thing basically west of Target Field on the fringe of downtown Minneapolis. But the politicians don't even seem to want to go down that road, which is curious to me because they have said yes to public funding for the Glass House, yes to public funding for Target Field, I believe yes to the X, yes to renovations for Target Center. I mean, they've given out a lot of tax money to these other venues, and here you have a group that will pay privately. They just want some tax help. But as politicians normally do, they are afraid of a backlash and resistance from the voting public. Here's what I think it'll somehow get done. I don't think people like Bill McGuire, Glenn Taylor, the Polads, you know, billionaires, I don't think they get together and come up with this idea and then back out. They have a lot of clout. You know, yeah. They'll get in the back rooms and they'll use their muscle if they have to. But here's what could happen if they meet a lot of resistance. The MLS could delay it. They could say, let's put Minneapolis instead of 2016, let's do it 2017, 2018. You got Sacramento out there. Sacramento was teed off that Minneapolis got this MLS team. Sacramento is ready. They feel like they deserved it more, and Sacramento only has the NBA Kings. They don't have all the other teams we do. So Sacramento's waiting, and I'm sure watching. So just as we had the threat of the Vikings going to L.A., maybe the MLS will end up in Sacramento.
Oh, wow. Well, I don't know if I'll be heartbroken.
Oh, I know you'll be crushed.
Yeah, you'll be crushed to not see another stadium built in downtown Minneapolis. Oh, Lord. If, in fact, they don't get it, you think they'll be off the charts for a long time? And does Sacramento have a stadium plan, or do they have a stadium in place? What's the story?
I'm not sure what their stadium situation is, but I think they're ready to go. And I think it's probably something that, you know, I know San Jose just put one up to the tune of 150 to 200 million, the San Jose Earthquakes. That's open now. So I'm sure Sacramento, and California's a lot like Minnesota. They don't want to spend public money on stadiums. They don't. You look at Los Angeles.
They got to spend public money on water out there.
They do. I do. And by the way, enjoy your almonds, because those may not be on your table anymore. To grow an almond, that's where the drought is. That epic drought is because it takes so much water to grow almonds.
I did not know
that. Yeah, I mean, so I love those almonds. Smokehouse, Blue Diamond almonds. I know you love them too. But it takes like 3 gallons of water for a single almond.
Wow. Are you serious?
Yeah. That's the main crux of the drought out there. The epic drought in my home state.
Now the we're getting into the almonds here a little bit. What kind of tree has almonds on? Is it an almond tree?
Yeah, it kind of shoots up in the air, and it's kind of like mostly Central California, Fresno and Bakersfield, that the inner belly of the state, and that's a huge agricultural region. And so what you have is you have the ag interest is a powerful lobby out there, and they are resistant to any kind of plans to, you know, limit water use because that's their business. But that's a big problem out there.
That's the crux of it.
So almonds. No more almond joy.
Almond joy. Every other candy bar is going to be a buck. Almond joy is going to be $5.
Yeah, and you know, a bag of almonds is already expensive.
Yeah, they are.
Wow.
They are right. All right. you knew you were going to get nuts and bolts today on the show. You didn't know it was going to be more nuts than anything.
Yeah, California, land of fruits and nuts.
Indeed. Okay, we need to take a break. Coming up, it's more fishing. We're going to talk to Al Moss and get our weekly fishing report from the Hall of Fame fisherman. That's coming up next. You're listening to Minnesota Score Radio, your almond ticket.
Back to Minnesota Score Radio with Wally Langfellow and Eric Nelson on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
Welcome back, Minnesota Score Radio. Time now for our Leech Lake fishing report, and we head up north to Leech Lake and Hall of Fame fisherman Al Moss. Al, the weather for the most part cooperated last weekend. I know Saturday was really nice. How'd the opener go?
The opener went very well for Leech Lake. The nice part about it, Wally, was, like I said, there wasn't that much of a wind. Everybody could get out. The lake was packed on all aspects of it. Every end of it had people at it. The landings were overflowed and out on the highway. Fishing was not what I would say excellent, but way above average. People all got fish. Nice thing about it, they also caught fish that they could keep. So it went well, and the bays that we fished, we went out at about 9 o'clock or 9:30. We were back in at about probably 12:30 to 1 o'clock. We had caught 40 walleyes. We kept 14.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was a good bite, and everybody had a good time from this walleye standpoint. Pike bite was good. Perch, you know, they're kind of pouting because they're in post-spawn. But overall, we had a good round fishing.
All right. Now, as you look at this weekend with the rain that we've had, rain on Thursday, and it's been kind of coolish this week, does it affect the fishing at all? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's definitely going to affect the fishing. We've dropped, Wally, just since last weekend, 10 degrees already in the water temp. Now, we've got people fishing every day, even in this weather, which has been out there with the rain and the wind and routine, and they're still catching fish. But it slowed it down considerably. We look for a lot of people this weekend because Saturday's supposed to be nice, you know, and into the evening, and Sunday is just a 50% situation. So I'm expecting, yeah, we're going to have a great fight again this weekend. A lot of people, a lot of the people are also fishing the panfish. That bite has been pretty good, but that's going to slow down real quick because they are pulling out of the mud, out of those areas where they've been feeding heavy right now. So I look for a lot of people. Good fishing this weekend. Remember, again, we've had a lot of rain now, probably 5 inches up here in Walker, which means that the lake came up 5 inches. People still can't get their boats on their lifts in a lot of places, and the harbors are shallow. So you've got to use your head where you're traveling. Watch that locator very, very close.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'll have you give us some insight on what you think folks should be using this weekend. We're talking to Al Moss, our Leech Lake Fishing Report. We're back after this time off.
For a memorable experience this year with some of the best fishing you'll find anywhere, make plans for Agency Bay Lodge on beautiful Leech Lake. Agency Bay Lodge is uniquely located on a peninsula that juts out in the center of Leech Lake, where you'll have easy, quick access to the best fishing spots on the lake. The staff at Agency Bay Lodge will help you locate where the fish are biting. Their full-service dock offers fueling, bait, and modern, fully-equipped boat rentals. Come and stay in their comfortable lakeside log cabins, or if you're not fishing, stop and enjoy a pizza, sandwich, or a beverage at their lakefront bar. For the best fishing and a great vacation, remember Agency Bay Lodge on Leech Lake. For more information, visit them at www.agencybaylodge.com.
Attention fishermen, Sugar Point Resort is fishing central on legendary Leech Lake. Sugar Point has a large protected harbor offering full gas and bait services with a wide choice of rental boat and motor combinations or a slip for your own boat. Sugar Point is also a great place for your family vacation with one, two, or three bedroom fully furnished modern cabins with beautiful lake views. Sugar Point is a great place for kids with two playground areas, paddle boats, basketball, volleyball, and an enclosed heated pool. So what are you waiting for? This summer, make it a trip to remember at Sugar Point Resort on Leech Lake. Visit them online at sugarpointresort.com. We continue along with the Leech Lake Fishing Report and Al Moss. All right, Al, if I'm fishing walleye this weekend, anything different than what you might have wanted to do opening weekend? What are you recommending and where should they go?
Well, what we're doing, what change is going to occur, Wally, is the sanders are going to become harder to catch and get a hold of from the bait stores. That we know. I would go with the minnow call, the rainbow if you can get a hold of it, or the bigger fatheads. The jig, stand-up jig routine is still the best. Colors seem to be working are the greens, the blues, what we call parrot, watermelon, and so forth. Go as small as you can again with the jig, flipping it in to the shallows. Some of the weed beds, the rushes areas are containing a lot of fish now too. But work them slow and deliberate. You might even want to have to drag the jig because it's that cold. But changing the minnow pattern will work. By the way, also, we have got quite a few people that are dragging leeches now and crawlers, and they're doing very well too. It seems that minnow bite is in the morning, and then at about 10 o'clock, as the heat generates, the leech bite goes on. But everybody, like I said, are catching fish, and that goes on even into the dark, into the evening. Shad wrap fishing is not going well yet. They don't seem to want that presentation. But that's what you got to deal with. Don't change anything else. You can fish regular rigging, just like with a Lindy rigger and a hook. But we're still fishing jigs, and that goes on for quite a while yet, Wally.
All right. Thanks, Al. Appreciate your time, and we will talk to you again next week.
Sounds good, Wally. We'll have an update on lots of species next week. Okay.
All right. Sounds good. That's Al Moss, Hall of Fame fisherman up on Leech Lake. We're back with more, Eric and I, right after this. Time out.
The Twin Cities home for Minnesota Score Radio is Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Now back to Wally and Eric.
And we return final segment, Minnesota Score Radio, your purple ticket. That's right.
Uh-oh.
Got to get the NFL in. It's May, and mini camps are going on around the nation. Speaking of the nation, the nation's newspaper, USA Today, earlier in the week, listed the five sleeping giants in the NFL. Tampa Bay's one. The New York Giants are another. The New York Jets are another. And the Minnesota Vikings are also in the group.
What is the sleeping giant? What does that mean? That they could potentially make a run and win the Super Bowl, but nobody's talking about them? Is that what we mean by this?
USA Today, I stuck this in my blog at gamedaygold.com, but their words are the Vikings are poised to make a playoff run. They like the way Coach Mike Zimmer is building defensively, which I would agree with. I like that too.
Yep.
Teddy Bridgewater, it looks like a solid chip at quarterback. And then, you know, you may have Adrian Peterson back. It certainly looks that way. So the Vikings are trending up, if you believe USA Today.
The real deal, huh?
Yeah, the real deal.
We'll see. Defense will win them a lot of football games or keep them in football games. But Teddy Bridgewater's got to stay healthy, too. You know, he got banged up a little bit last year. If you remember, we had to suffer through another Christian Ponder
attack. If he's not healthy, we're looking at Sean Hill.
Yeah, it's and it's lights out. I mean, it's hand the ball off to Adrian 30 times a game, which wouldn't be a bad thing necessarily. But and then again, he is, what's he going to be, 31 this year? Is that right?
I think you're right.
31, yeah. I think, yeah. So, and, of course, he has to officially decide that he's going to play with the Minnesota Vikings this year. I don't think that they're going to give him much choice. I think that he's under contract, but that's an interesting number though, that they're in the top five of the sleeping giants of the NFL this year. A sleeping giant that hasn't been to the Super Bowl since 1977.
Yeah, that's wow. You had to go there.
Going on 40 years,
yeah,
by the way.
That's almost a gopher-like Rose Bowl drought, really. It's not much worse. And
16 years left.
Yeah. And well, the stat that always bugs me, or should bug anybody who's a Minnesota Viking fan, is since the last Super Bowl the Vikings played in 77 against Oakland at the Rose Bowl. They lost. We know that. 32-14. Since then, every team in the NFC has gone to the Super Bowl at least once, except for Detroit. Minnesota and Detroit.
Yeah. Well, we're in the same category as the Lions. That's good company.
Well, and we're going to be just like the Lions. We're going to have another downtown, you know, field house slash glass house facility indoors. I'd say the Vikings are a lot more like the Lions than they are the Packers.
We are the Lions of the North.
Exactly. I mean, Viking fans want to compare themselves to the Bears and the Packers. I don't see the comparison. The organizations are much different. When you're an indoor team, you're different than an outdoor team. I'm sorry, that's a fact.
Well, and the facts have shown that they have not been to the Super Bowl in 38 years now. And so that pretty much tells it all.
Do you sense it at all with the Mike Zimmer regime? Year two coming up, hopefully not nearly the turbulence they had last year with Adrian. Hopefully Adrian gets on the same page and the defense is as good as we think. Do you feel like they're going in the right direction?
I think so. I think you make a couple of good points. One, the defense is better. They drafted defense with Trey Waynes. And, you know, they went right down the line. First three picks were all defense this year. I think they're concentrating on making sure that they're bringing Chad Greenway back for at least one more year. I think that they made a mistake a couple of years ago with Antoine Winfield and not bringing him back. And I think that they maybe people within the organization, maybe Rick Spielman sees that and say, hey, let's keep this guy if we, at all possible.
Well, you know, Antoine was a little bit like a Torrey Hunter.
Yes.
For the Minnesota Vikings.
Exactly.
I mean, well respected. Not as demonstrative or loud, more of a
no, but just a
but a
guy,
leader.
Yeah, a leader and a guy who has proven himself in the
right.
NFL year after year, Pro Bowl player, you know, all NFL all pro. And to let him go, and I know that he ended up getting cut at Seattle. I understand all that, and but even at his advanced age for an NFL cornerback or D back, he still would have been one of their better defensive backs, and he would have been able to share some of the wisdom that he had. Because so part of that is not only, I mean, he was always known as a great tackler, but part of it, what he does and what he did for them was cerebral. I mean, he just knowing where to play guys and how to play guys and the whole nine yards.
Yeah, and I agree with you, and I think that, you know, defense is a lot of technique, really football is in general, but cornerback, you know, you need the speed, you need the size, you need a lot of things, but you also need good technique. And that's where I have confidence in Mike Zimmer and his staff, that they're getting athletes they want and they will be able to teach them and get them to thrive in their system. And it should be fun if these guys, you know, hit their peak and reach their peak. Now, as we know, Deflategate's been dominating the headlines this week.
We're not going to go
deep into it. But what has come out of Deflategate, and the Minnesota Vikings really didn't have any kind of a penalty for this. You know, they heated the footballs in that Carolina game when it was like 12 degrees.
You went to that game, didn't you?
Yeah, I sat outside. I think it was the eighth coldest game in Minnesota Vikings history.
Congratulations.
Yeah. It was cold. Cam Newton wanted no part of that cold. There's that advantage I'm telling you that the Vikings had that day and could have forever, but they gave it up. But my point is they heated the footballs. It's on video, and all they got was a warning. Does that make the Minnesota Vikings cheaters?
No.
No, because they won.
Well, Brady and the Patriots won. And here's how I'm going to differentiate it for you. One, they didn't do it behind closed doors. I think that's number one on the list. I think that Brady and or the Patriots staff or whoever was involved in this were, they deliberately did it to gain a competitive advantage behind closed doors. Vikings didn't do it behind closed doors. They did it out in front of everybody, and nobody complained about it.
Only the Vikings would do it in public.
Well.
All right, I just had to ask that question.
I'm trying to smooth this over a little bit. I'm giving you my opinion.
You're putting a purple spin on it.
I'm putting the purple spin. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid here.
Well, yeah, I bring it up because
it's an interesting
your Cleveland Browns, their GM Ray Farmer, got a four-game suspension for sending a text message or multiple messages from, I believe, the press box to the sidelines last year, which is an NFL no-no. So he's going away for four games. There's a fine involved. And then the Atlanta Falcons, who piped in, you know, phony crowd noise to the Georgia Dome, which, oh, by the way, I know the Minnesota Vikings did at the Metrodome. I stood by those speakers on the field.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, that was a rock concert and a 747 taking off all at once with 63,000 people screaming. They did it, too. But the Falcons
got caught.
Got caught, and their owner apologized, Arthur Blank. He said, we're embarrassed.
Yeah, well, I don't necessarily think that heating the footballs out in front of everybody was analogous to deflating. But,
okay.
it's an interesting point. We don't want to spend too much time on that. St. Paul Saints, you mentioned stadiums. St. Paul Saints will be opening up shortly. Their new stadium looks pretty good. We talked a little bit about it last week. I saw some photos of it. When I think of the Saints, the popularity of the Saints took off when people got tired of being indoors for baseball. They didn't want to spend the bucks to go sit inside at the Metrodome. They wanted the tailgating part of it. They wanted to be outside. You know, the baseball, it's low class A baseball, so it's not the world's greatest baseball. It's entertaining, and they do a good job, you know, between innings with all the pig bringing the ball out and all that stuff that they do at minor league games, which, by the way, a lot of it's showing up at major league games these days. But do you think that them being in downtown St. Paul is going to change the kind of crowds that they get? Because really, there's no place to do the kind of tailgating that they did in the past. You can take the train there. The light rail drops you off about a block from the stadium now. But really, I remember the Saints games I've been to over at Midway the last several years. You know, there's a lot of barbecuing and tailgating going on in that parking lot. I mean, I think that people looked at that as, you know, hey, we still get to tailgate at a baseball game, but that's going away now. What's your thoughts on that going forward with the Saints?
Well, you know, I think your point is a good one. Look, it's going to be a different kind of experience. That doesn't mean it won't be a good one. I'm sure the ballpark's fabulous. Can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it'll be great.
And, you know, there's something about baseball in a downtown urban setting where you can see a skyline off in the distance. That's pretty cool. But I think your tailgating thing is right on. I've gone to Saints games, and that was part of the deal. You pulled into the Midway lot, and people had their grills out. It was really the last oasis of tailgating here in the land of tailgating. Was invented. Remember the Vikings at the old Met?
They sure were.
You know, even North Star playoff games at Met Center. Tailgating was big here. There's some people who don't believe it or don't remember it because they're not old enough. And that's why you and I have lobbied for tailgating to be part of the new Viking stadium, and it won't be. It's not going to be part of the game day vibe. So I think the Saints are going to lose that. The analogy I would draw is the New York Islanders. They're leaving Long Island. They're done now. Nassau Coliseum. It was a dump. Didn't have any suites. It wasn't up to snuff for 2015, but they had tailgating there and they had a loyal fan base. Now they're going to Brooklyn. It's train friendly, but there's not going to be any tailgating outside of Islander games. So
they're going to be Barclays Center now?
Yes.
Interesting. Are they changing their name?
I haven't heard that yet. If I'm Brooklyn, I would be lobbying for that. I certainly, you got the Nets, I would want the Islanders. I would want to differentiate myself from the Rangers in any way possible, especially since the Rangers are still playing hockey.
Yeah, and the Rangers are pretty good. Yeah, you're right. I don't know. I'm just curious to see how this is. You know, the first year, I think that they're going to get a lot of curiosity. Folks are going to go to the new Saints Stadium. I think that that's all well and good. But, you know, again,
will it be more costly?
Yeah.
That's the key. Will it be as fun and as, you know, or are you going to start to see more of a stuffed suit? Yeah, that's what I hope. I just hope that they can keep that Mike Vec fingerprint on it where it is fun. And
well, they got to keep the cost down.
They have to.
Because let me tell you something. Getting into a Twins game, you can buy tickets at a pretty cheap price right now. You know, you go online to StubHub or one of those places, or even to the guy standing out front hawking them. You can get tickets at a fairly reasonable rate. You can get inside for $10 or less many times, depending on what night and what day or whatever, or who the opponent is. And so I'm not so sure that going to the Saints is going to be that much cheaper. Now, once you get inside Target Field, as you well know, you know, get out the freaking credit card or the checkbook to eat a sandwich.
Or bring your own food in your own bag.
Yeah, you call it trendy Target Field, I call it spendy Target Field.
That's good.
So, and the Saints have to be careful in that respect because I think that, you know, given the choice, I'm going to a major league game. I'm sorry. I mean, you know, no offense to the St. Paul Saints, but it's low class A baseball. I'll go over there once. I want to check it out for sure because I kind of like the entertainment. And I usually go once every year or two. I'll go to a Saints game. So, I mean, I'm interested to see it, particularly with the new stadium. But how the venue is going to be and how folks are going to react to the changes without the tailgating, are they going to get that same crowd or are they going to have to find a whole different crowd?
You've just got to make it where Joe Lunchbucket can take the kids out there. And it's affordable. It just has to be that way, because if it gets on that spendy end, you know, there'll be a novelty of a year or two, no doubt, new ballpark, but that it won't continue if it's too costly. If they think, well, it's just a mini version of the Twins, for instance.
Yep.
You don't want to be the Twins.
No.
I mean, you're not the Twins, and you certainly don't have the brand of baseball that the Twins give you, so you have to do things differently. And that, you know, sometimes when you play in a venue that, to be blunt, sucks, like the Twins used to at the Metrodome, like we talked about with the Rays and the A's and the Saints at the old Midway, you work harder. You have to market harder. You have to be more creative. Remember, the Twins had some great marketing slogans in the Metrodome. You had to really work to get people in. Once you got a nice ballpark, sometimes you lose your edge a little.
All right, reminder, visit our website. It's MinnesotaScore.com, home to the Minnesota Score magazine. You can subscribe right online. Just $19.95 for 1 year of the Minnesota Score.
All right, let's FedEx out those thank yous. One goes to Rocky, another to Al Moss, also one to Jordan Schaefer, also one to the almond farmers in California. We are hoping that you get some rain soon.
You guys are nuts.
So the epic drought ends. Poor Wally Langfellow. I'm Eric Nelson saying so long. We are Minnesota Score Radio, your St. Paul Saints ticket.